Now, our final speaker for this morning before we move to the wider panel discussion is Michael Vine. Michael is a director of within Standard & Poor's Corporate and Government Ratings Group and the head of research and criteria initiatives for the insurance ratings team in the Asia Pacific. He's responsible for insurance sector commentary and research in the region, as well as criteria and development for insurance ratings. He's also involved in the rating of insurance companies based throughout the Asia-Pacific region. And prior to joining Standard & Poor's, Michael also worked in various credit and relationship management roles in the corporate banking sector and in treasury in the corporate sector in Australia. Thank you. Michael.
Thanks very much, Adrian, and thanks to the Institute for asking Standard & Poor's for a ratings agency perspective. I'll talk today on, first of all, our views of global insurance key risks and where we see regulatory issues placed in that area. And then we'll move on to a little bit of an assessment of where we view regulatory oversight in Australia. And then finally, how we assess regulation and regulatory capital under our new insurance criteria. But certainly the first slide here of key risks, which we've identified as principally a low interest rate environment, the difficulty with that obviously being leading to lower investment returns, perhaps a move to seek higher yields, a move to equities, infrastructure projects, generally a higher risk for the industry, but to be fair, of greater risk to the life sector rather than the GI sector. Regulatory issues as number two, look, principally probably more driven out of the European sector and to a lesser extent the US and into Asia Pacific. Certainly the key issues there, uncertainty around capital, uncertainty around investment and asset charges leading to strategic choice, etc. Initially some uncertainty around who was in or out of the list of globally systemically important insurers. And overall, I suppose an impact of some strategic uncertainty. That was a key issue for us. The global economic outlook being mixed. Certainly, ongoing recessions in Europe. Evidence of a recovery into the US, perhaps Asia Pacific being constrained from those low growth issues. Sovereign related actions have slowed in Europe but still remain high. This has been a key driver of insurance ratings being the difficulties felt in various European markets, which has driven down ratings and obviously a key risk for us which has mellowed. And I think since the outcome of the new insurance criteria rollout, probably a number of negative outlooks have been revised, and there's been a slight movement upwards in average ratings, potentially as the new criteria has more of a forward view of capital and earnings, and we're able to look through perhaps a short-term lull. Mentioning there that the developing markets and also markets in Asia Pacific, both advanced and developing, have some different issues to some of these global key risks, and certainly the key difference being exposure to low interest rates is slightly different. So generally in say Australia and New Zealand, we've operated at higher interest rate levels, and still now at the mid twos would be seen as being higher than the rates in Europe. Countries such as Japan and Taiwan have dealt for many years with a low interest rate environment and have learnt to live with that and create profitable products. again, potentially thinking on the life side, but, you know, Japan moving more to medical-type products that have been more profitable in a low-interest rate environment. I think as well, fundamentally, the growth driver in the Asia-Pacific is stronger than other markets overseas, certainly driven out of China and under-insured markets. The gentrification of those markets has driven GDP growth and growth in insurance premium, which has been generally supportive and favourable. In that context, we are seeing the overall GDP growth for Asia Pacific moving from the mid fives to 5%. Australia, our forecasts slowing from a year ago, but still a moderate increase into perhaps the high twos, into the low threes, into next year and 2015. The stimulus in Japan, certainly a driver for growth there. Unusually, Thailand moved into recession with two quarters of negative GDP, and that's an issue, obviously, with its post-cat risks as well for us to review. Korea, interesting, a move to now its largest trading partner is in the region, it's China. I think previously it was the US. And then back to China with our estimates, and you know, broadly similar to market estimates of a sort of mid-sevens GDP growth forecast. And, you know, I think sort of probably seven is the new nine for China there in terms of its growth. So a base case, stable and supportive outlook. Probably too much on economics at this stage, but that's where we see key risks. The second point, which was the regulatory issues creating some uncertainty, and really there the impact, the key issue is the cost of capital. How much capital do we need? What quality and what qualification for capital will there be? What is hybrid treatment, etc.? And generally, higher costs of capital are seen as a negative rating outcome. I mentioned before how there are constraints to strategic choices. There are heavy costs of compliance. There's a distraction for management in this focus, which can perhaps take eyes off risks and issues elsewhere. For a while there, I think waiting for the GSIIs to be announced was again a distraction and an issue to be waiting to be resolved. Just a talk there on, or a list there on a few points of some of the issues, probably Solvency II in Europe, seen from our point of view as probably, you know, creating the greatest uncertainty, and I think, you know, earlier comments about the issues there as being a lot of uncertainty, a lot of work, and still issues to be resolved. Certainly greater certainty in Australia and New Zealand. Interesting if we see, for some preparation for the talk, looked at a survey from Pricewaterhouse that it conducts with the CSFI, Centre for Study of Financial Innovation, and they survey insurers globally to determine key risks and issues facing. And number one globally is regulatory issues or regulatory risk, followed by investment performance, followed by macroeconomic environment, business practices, and then natural catastrophe. For the non-life sector only, natural catastrophe is number one, and regulatory issue was number two. And I think the survey for New Zealand was that regulatory issues or regulatory risk was number 12. And it just probably puts into context the issues of probably natural catastrophe, market practices, competition, the search for the search for skilled labour, etc., that regulation was lower. It probably also is a reflection of, you know, our views of certainly the regulation in New Zealand has been a lighter touch, and although advancements and improvement under RBNZ, and I think certainly Australia's interaction and issue with regulation is higher on the list. In summary, for this slide, we see strong regulation as a good thing, and ultimately, you know, contributes to financial strength and ratings and industry stability. Just to drill down a little bit more in terms of Australian and New Zealand advancement, but at a cost, I think certainly degrees of these issues, and for Australia, you know, seen as a sophisticated, risk-based regime with sort of in-depth charges and insights into key risks and oversight there. We view Australia as a strong regime, probably in a similar bucket to regimes such as Canada and Switzerland. For New Zealand, certainly improving and more sophisticated under RBNZ, but look, we're still, and I think the industry is still to test the levels of intervention and oversight with the market there. Look, this is not without its costs, and there are costs to manage, management time, levels of this being onerous, and it can be a barrier to entry. And I think we're seeing evidence of some insurers that have exited some local markets, and I'm talking probably here and New Zealand, or faced with difficulty in running because of capital cost or regulatory oversight being onerous. But look, in some of the business models, you know, potentially that we've seen, it's probably not a bad thing that there is that raised barrier to entry. The next slides I'll talk through would be back to our insurance criteria, and just to touch on a couple of areas in terms of the assessment of regulatory risk and a view of regulation under that framework, and also how we treat regulatory capital versus our own internal capital modelling. And moving to the insurance framework, actually I should sort of preface this, many will know, but just very quickly, Standard and Poor's, after a couple of years consultation with internally and externally with the industry, introduced new insurance criteria May 7 of this year, and then from June to July rolled out that new criteria globally. The criteria is more transparent and more granular, transparent to the point that the various rating factors that contribute to a rating outcome, it's now more transparent as to how those rating factors contribute to the rating outcome. In the past, we have looked at many of these factors before, such as competitive position, capital strength, etc., and industry risk, but we've had very little guidance in the past of how these factors contribute to a rating outcome. The framework here is generally in two parts of bringing through a view of business risk together with financial risk. And business risk is a combination of industry and economic, country-based risks, as well as an insurer's competitive position, bringing those together with a forward view of capital and earnings. Some modifications there on risk position being perhaps exposure to investment asset risk, FX risk, etc., financial flexibility, access to debt and capital markets, bringing together an anchor. So if one has perhaps very strong business and very strong financial position, and on a matrix outcome, the outcome is a AA-. And from there, some various modifiers based on our view of ERM and management and governance. And then further down the bottom, additions and reductions to the rating based on perhaps sovereign risk issues or strength from parentage. The outcome for this globally was around 90% of ratings were affirmed under the new criteria, and of those 10% that moved, roughly 60% up and 40% down. And in Australia, we probably had more ratings affirmed, but probably more downgrades than other markets, principally through a different view of strategic importance for some subsidiaries as the criteria changed, and also some holding company notching that moved from one notch to two notches. I'll just touch on the ICRA, being the Industry and Insurance Industry Country Risk Assessment, which is our view of the risks facing the industry in which the insurer is working. And these are the country-specific type risks here. Economic and political risk that we generally take from our sovereign analysts and overlap to a degree with sovereign ratings. Financial system risk that draws from financial sector, banking industry risks. Payment culture and rule of law, reasonably self-explanatory. Then institutional framework, which is where we're assessing regulatory strength as well as other issues such as the track record, governance and transparency in terms of accounting framework, etc. So that's one component to the ICRA. The other is on the company-specific the industry-specific factors, where we've listed return on equity. Really, profitability is an insight to a company with a strong competitive position and a strong business position should be reflected in a strong ROE, and hence it's a contributor to these factors here. Product risk, such as catastrophe exposure to cat risk on the non-life side, could be exposure to long-tail liabilities, or on the life side, perhaps ALM mismatch. Barriers to entry, so higher barriers as a strength to the industry, and market growth prospects is a positive. So to drill down into institutional framework, I've mentioned certainly the regulatory framework is a key issue there. So our assessment of both the sophistication and effectiveness of the regulator, looking at areas such as staffing, use of and sophistication of capital models, and oversight, and then the track record, the depth and frequency of monitoring. The history of intervention at various stages, the influence on the industry, the success in mitigating failure over time, and being a track record, governance standards, and then transparency outside of regulation, but more into accounting standards, etc. Moving to our view of capital and earnings and how regulatory capital assessment feeds into our view of capital and earnings. I mentioned this is a forward view of capital, so we have our internal capital models with a view over 3 years in terms of the earnings outlook and how that feeds through into capital. Before we go through the process, the first step is to look to see or to determine whether the company is near breach of regulatory requirements or regulatory capital adequacy. Some of you here might remember earlier versions of our criteria that talked of regulatory ratios, perhaps at 1.5 times or 1.2 times breach as being an indicator of a weak position. We've moved away from that, and it's purely a more sort of liberal interpretation of when a regulator is likely to intervene and take control of an insurance organisation. If that was to occur, the standalone credit profile and group credit profiles limited to generally to a single B plus rating, and there are other limitations. So really, we don't want to see a rating that's at risk to a company that's at risk to a regulatory breach having a rating higher than that level. Once that hurdle has passed, we then move on to the second and third phase, which is our view of capital adequacy based on our S&P internal capital models. And there are some constraints there in terms of size issues that's just mentioned in the last dot point there, size issues at the US 100 million and US 25 million that brings our capital model score down. And then representativeness of modelling. When we look at the model, is it legitimately capturing all the risks, or is it under or overstating some, which we can adjust? And then there are some other size adjustments based on representativeness. And to give you a couple of ideas of those, perhaps if a capital model was at a AAA level, extremely strong, if capital was under US 1 billion, we take that off by one to the AA or very strong. If it's under US 250, it moves to the single A or strong level. And that was from global testing of how exposure to risks of size impact a view of likelihood of default and a view of capital. A little bit more detail on the regulatory capital adequacy and just assessing, you know, when we see an insurer as being at risk of regulatory intervention. At significant risk, where we believe there's high risk of regulatory intervention, and then at low risk, where the regulator is unlikely to intervene. I think I mentioned before, at low risk is where we go on with our capital modelling. We haven't documented publicly our view of what these benchmarks are in different jurisdictions. Look, the closest I'll move to is in Australia. It's likely to be a breach of the PCA, but there'd be certainly dialogue and discussion with the industry, the counterpart, the regulator, prior to determining and acting on at significant risk. Now, there are certainly other markets. Insurers in Thailand recently breached regulatory minimums and actively continued trading with their reinsurance recoveries exposure post the Thailand floods, leading to certainly capital model breaches in terms of regulation. But a market there, in terms of freely able to trade. Having said that, in certain circumstances of capital plan, access to capital, etc., and that was something that no doubt a regulator's looking to assess as well as ourselves assessing. So I think it's a case-by-case basis, and depending on the situation, the counterparty and the regulator at hand. So is that the final slide, and I'll hand to Adrian for the discussion. Thank you.